Welcome to Discoveries, Cedars-Sinai's podcast about research and education. I'm your host, Dr. Corey Cross. Today, we'll be discussing the amazing stem cell research being done at Cedars-Sinai and if stem cells could lead to a breakthrough in ALS treatment. We have two very special guests with us today, Dr. Clive Svensson, who is the Executive Director for the Board of Governors Regenerative Medicine Institute and the Carrie and Simone Vicker Family Foundation Distinguished Chair in Regenerative Medicine. We also have Dr. Richie Ho, who is a research scientist at the Board of Governors Regenerative Medicine Institute. Dr. Svensson, Dr. Ho, thank you so much for joining us today. So for those of us not on the cutting edge of stem cell research, can you explain what induced pluripotent stem cells are? Because I have to be honest, I had no idea you could reprogram a cell to go backwards. So like I had thought that it was just a one-way progression, that cells start out as stem cells and then specialize into what they're going to become, skin, organ, et cetera. But to think that this is bidirectional and that these cells can be induced to basically go back into stem cells, well, to me, that's just game-changing, isn't it?
Well, it's pretty amazing. Richie and I are going to riff off each other going through this, but it is amazing. And I'm always constantly surprised about how many people don't know about induced pluripotent stem cells. In fact, we go to meetings, Richie and I, all the time, and in the audience, there are people, scientists, people who really haven't heard of it. However, in the last 5 years, it's becoming so prominent that you just can't ignore it. It's really the most amazing technology. So you can take anybody up to 100 years old, this has been done. You can take a skin cell or a fibroblast, and you give it a few proteins, essentially. Just putting a few proteins in this cell, they're called pluripotency proteins, take it back in time, as you described, to an embryonic state. So you've basically gone from adult to embryonic cell in the petri dish. Then we use certain factors to expand that cell. We call it pluripotent, and pluri means many, and potent means potency. What can it do? So pluripotent means those cells that we can expand now from that one patient, 100-year-old, can be grown forever. They're pretty much immortal. They're young. They're back to age zero, essentially, embryonic. And now we can turn them into any cell of the human body, beating heart cell, a neuron, which is what we're going to talk about in ALS. And it's just a fascinating technology that the founder of it, Yoshini Yamanaka in Japan, got the Nobel Prize within about 8 years. It's revolutionized how we think about aging and how we think about using cells in therapeutic approaches.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the stuff from science fiction. It's amazing.
And I'd like to add on top of that, the huge potential in capturing each and every individual person's personalized genome, right? Because your genetic information is different than mine, and each of our distinct cells that are produced as stem cells, they carry that genetic information. And what happens as a consequence of it in all the different cell types of the body is now within our grasp.
Right. Like, so for me, when I had my three kids, we saved the cord blood for each child, thinking that they might be the closest match that the other child might need if they needed something in the future. But now what you're saying is you can have an exact match of you. You're not looking for your closest relative.
Yes, exactly.
That's wonderful. So tell me a little bit about the history of this approach to studying combination gene editing and stem cell therapy as it applies to ALS.
So this really goes back quite a long way. And really, in ALS, you lose motor neurons. And they're called motor neurons because they drive your muscles. And those neurons die both in the brain and in the spinal cord. There's two neurons, one in the brain that activates the one in the spinal cord that then makes the muscle move in the arm or the leg or the breathing. So essentially what we did is we designed a type of therapy where we take a stem cell. In this case, it's not an induced pluripotent stem cell. It's a difference in neural stem cells. So it's a stem cell that can make neural tissue. And we engineer that stem cell to release a powerful drug or growth factor, in this case called GDNF. It's a bit like a Trojan horse. So now we can transplant those cells into the spinal cord of an ALS patient. When they get in, they make a support cell that supports the dying motor neurons. And at the same time, they release this powerful drug, GDNF, right where it's needed, right by the dying motor neurons.
And in doing that, does it regenerate that dying motor neuron?
So in models that we've used, the animal models, it protects the motor neurons from death. So as they're undergoing death, they pick up this survival signal from the GDNF that we deliver, and they slow down the rate of death. So we're trying to slow progression of the disease and maybe give a tickle to the system to make the neurons activate and work a bit better.
Yeah. So the beautiful aspect of this approach that Clive created is that it can be applied to all ALS patients because you don't have to know what's going wrong in each individual ALS patient. It could be a genetic origin or a mixture of other environmental origins that caused them to have ALS, but ultimately delivering this product can help protect the motor neurons in the patient from dying. So that speaks to the genetic history of ALS, right? Where we know 10% of all ALS patients, they have a family history, and we can track it down to say about like 40, one of 40 genes that is mutated and gone wrong. But the other 90% of ALS patients, we just don't know, no family history, and they're known as just sporadic. We don't know the cause.
So Dr. Ho, I wanted to ask you, how are you using stem cells to model ALS?
So as I mentioned before, the stem cells capture the genetic architecture of each individual patient, right? And so if the hypothesis is that ALS is a genetic disease, then an ALS patient's iPS cell would carry that genetic mutation. And if we were to turn it into a motor neuron or other neural cell types that reflect the patient's own tissue, then the events leading up and causing ALS and motor neuron degeneration could potentially play out in the dish, right? And we could look at it under the microscope and understand all the molecules and events going on that cause it. And if we understand the mechanism causing motor neuron death, then we can find effective cures and prevent it or reverse it. So that is the whole premise underlying iPS models of ALS, where we can take a patient's cells and really individually understand, out of 1,000 patients, could we find 10 groups, right? Can we divide them into 10 groups of group one has this particular cause? They might share a genetic mutation, or they might not have that same mutation, but other genes, right? A constellation of other genes that go wrong ultimately end up in the same dysfunction. And that's why they get ultimately motor neuron death, which might be distinct from what the events that go on in, say, group two, which, you know, something else goes wrong, but ultimately it leads to the same outcome. So I think that's the value of having these cellular models.
So you've gotten these cells, you get them back to their stem cells. They have the same genetic makeup as obviously the individual they came from. So if they had a genetic cause for the ALS, it's going to be there. And then you're able to watch this play out. Now you're able to basically rewind the cells back to stem cells quickly. Now you're watching it play out. Are you watching it play out in real time, or are you able to embed it into an animal or like a fruit fly or something that goes faster? Or what is it that you're able to do to be able to see this play out faster than in what would take in human life?
That is absolutely the one question that I am most fascinated by. So we understand how to effectively drive a 100-year-old blood cell or skin cell, or, you know, a 50-year-old skin cell back to one point in time, the pluripotent state. And we understand through decades worth of understanding developmental biology, how an embryo forms, you know, what proteins and factors we can add to the cells in the dish to get them to resemble a neuron or a heart cell or whatever. But beyond that, they don't develop much like an adult, right? And so the key challenge is how to get these cells in the dish to accelerate and age 60 years into the future, which as a basic researcher, you can't really afford to wait 60 years for the cell to age. So the whole challenge is to try to understand, you know, how can we accelerate it? And that gets into the questions of what are the basic molecular functions and events that happen during the lifespan of an individual. How do we reenact aging to get the cells to look old? And one strategy is, one, you know, directly manipulate the factors in the dish. Another alternative is to transplant them into an animal, because in the plastic dish, you're missing a lot of different factors that might play a role in aging, such as blood supply, connective tissue, microbiota, all these sorts of stuff that you can potentially provide the more suitable environment if you were to place it in an animal like a mouse or a rodent.
That makes sense. And then Dr. Svensson, I wanted to ask you about any sort of clinical trials we have planned with this and sort of the major breakthroughs that you hope to achieve with this line of research.
Yeah, we have currently two clinical trials going on with these neural progenitors engineered to make growth factor. The growth factor now is GDNF. The first one is with Dr. Adam Mamelak here at the hospital. He's a neurosurgeon. And Dr. Rich Lewis, who's a neurologist and PI of the trial, and I'm the sponsor of the trial looking after it. This has come through the state funding, California Institute of Regenerative Medicine, and it's allowing us now to transplant these cells into the motor cortex. That's the part of the brain that initiates movement. we're actually targeting something called the hand knob. The motor cortex is what we call a homunculus. And so each part of the motor cortex, this area of the brain, represents a different part of the body. It's one part for the leg, one part for the mouth, one part for the hand. So we're just focusing on the hand knob. We're transplanting the cells into ALS patients into this hand knob region and then looking to see how the hand function does over time. Does it stabilize? Does it get worse? Does it get better? So that's the question we have. Can these cells improve function in hand movement and hand control after transplantation?
Right. And I would think that just what you're explaining, what you're describing, there are other diseases that affect motor neurons. There are other ways that motor neurons get injured in humans. And that really, since you're talking about targeting the end product, that some of these treatments and this research that you're doing may be able to use this model and be effective with other diseases, right?
Yes, and to use this for other diseases is a very good point. It's really, we see this as a platform technology, we call it. The cells we're making are astrocytes. They're support cells in the brain. They look after the motor neurons that are dying. We're not trying to replace the motor neuron itself or any neuron, actually. We're putting in support cells that are engineered to make drugs. So they're kind of like a nursemaid, and they're delivering drugs to the patient, if you like, that's the motor neuron. We're doing that for stroke. We're doing that for Parkinson's disease. And we're looking into Alzheimer's disease, the same strategy. So we can use this across multiple different neurological diseases.
That's just amazing and so exciting. Dr. Ho, you started working in Dr. Svensson's lab, but now you have your own lab in Focus. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit more about what you're doing there and how the stem cells that you're studying really are leading you to understand the genetic underlying causes of ALS.
Yeah, I think the other arm of the research is, again, rather than targeting a patient that's already experiencing paralysis and really at the early stage of the disease, if you understand what causes it, and you could possibly have preventive medicine, right, to understand that this patient is at high risk for developing this disease and intervene before they experience paralysis or any loss in quality of life. So yeah, I joined Clive's lab because I saw him give a talk at UCLA and said, I'm heading a stem cell institute and I wanted to get in on that. So I joined his lab. So I'm more zeroing in on figuring out ways to short circuit that aging problem, understanding that if we can accelerate aging in the dish and really understand on an individual to individual basis what could possibly go wrong, then how do we offer preventative treatments? And so it's kind of like a short circuiting type of approach.
Wonderful. And what are the most important advances in neurodegenerative disease since the invention of these induced pluripotent stem cells?
The whole Nobel Prize basis is Shinya Yamanaka's discovery that you can reprogram. But also, this was one in conjunction with Sir John Gurdon, his discovery in 1958 of just basically demonstrating the principle that the identity of a cell is plastic. An aging cell in the body, the demonstration that you can reprogram it and change cell fate, right? Going backwards and forwards in time. That's just a real like eye-opening discovery. And so people have taken it and demonstrated a principle that you can reprogram all sorts of cells or directly transdifferentiate, say turn a skin cell directly into a neuron without having to go through that embryonic state. So it's this way of thinking. It's just revolutionized how we think about cell fate. And that has many implications for many diseases that we want to study, you know, other neurodegenerative diseases or even heart disease or cancer.
It's a very exciting field. It's addictive, right? It's like having Play-Doh. You can make any cell type. On the more cautious side, because I'm British and I'm always more cautious. On the more cautious side, we really have to prove that these technologies, you know, we have to validate them in clinical trials, right? So we have to show that if your model works in the Petri dish, does that have an effect? So if we develop a drug that fixes our IPS model in the dish, protects the motor neuron, does it work in patients? We're not quite there yet, but we're in that exciting phase where there are groups now converting their IPS data into drug trials. And if those start working, we're going to see a whole paradigm shift in how we develop drugs. It really comes down to precision health, personalized medicine, that you're going to have your own IPS line. If this works, and you will find out what's wrong with you from your IPS line, if it was a heart arrhythmia, we'll be modeling your heart beating cells and putting a drug on those cells and seeing which one works out of 10, putting 10 drugs on, and then picking the one that works and giving it to you. And you can just extrapolate that. ALS, you can extrapolate it to Parkinson's. And if you can model it in the Petri dish using IPS, we have a potential for precision health. But having said that, we have to prove that. As scientists, it's great and come up with these ideas. Why I work at Cedar Sinai is that we're in a position now in the hospital to actually do trials based on Richie's work and try it in patients. And we have a great pipeline in regenerative medicine for doing that. And we're proving it by doing clinical trials right now based on stem cell technologies.
I think that sums this up perfectly and really drives home the point of the amazing research that you're doing. Thank you, Dr. Ho and Dr. Svensson, for taking the time to bring this research to us that you're doing at the Cedars-Sinai Regenerative Medicine Institute. The work you're doing is fascinating and really game-changing.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Visit cedars-sinai.org/discoveries to read all the stories in Cedars-Sinai magazine about research and education. That's cedars-sinai.org/discoveries. That concludes this episode of Discoveries, Cedars-Sinai's podcast about research and education. If you found this podcast helpful, please share it on your social channels and be sure to check out the entire podcast library for other topics that might be of interest to you. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. Thanks for listening to this episode of Discoveries. I'm your host, Dr. Corey Cross.